Track 6. Here we are at the sports desk once more, with plenty to report this week from local soccer and rugby to other sporting happenings far and wide. So, here goes. And I mentioned at the end of last week's report, Stourbridge Rugby followers' expedition to watch their team in action at Chester on Saturday. So I'd better follow that up with a report on proceedings. Excellent day out, enjoyed by all, except for the rugby itself, which was dire from a Stourbridge perspective. I'm sure Chester will have enjoyed this match. It was pretty straightforward from their point of view, against an opponent who seemed unable to keep hold of the ball. I lost count of the number of times Stourbridge lost possession just as a promising move built up. Add to that an inability to throw line-out ball to their own man and the general loss of confidence the team appear to be suffering, and you can understand why Stourbridge lost the match 31-0. That makes 5 losses in a row now, and the second time in the last month when they failed to score a single point. Not good news from Stourton Park. Just as well, the Stourbridge Lions, the amateur team who share the facilities there, continue to drive all before them. They recorded another big win on Saturday by 40-5 against Tamworth. Another 5 league points in the bag, and even better, their nearest challenger in the league, Camp Hill, lost on Saturday, so Lions now have a 6-point advantage at the top of the table. Saturday, March the 25th, will be a big day for the Lions. That's the date Camp Hill are due to visit Stourton Park for a league fixture, and if our lads can win that, it should virtually guarantee them promotion at the end of the season. Now for the local soccer news. Glassboys were back on home territory at the weekend, and a sizeable crowd turned up to watch them in action against Matlock Town. It was as well to be in position in the ground in good time on Saturday afternoon, for the match was helter-skelter from the first minute, and Stourbridge were in the lead after only 3. But by the 10-minute mark, it was 1-1. Stourbridge added 2 more goals for a 3-1 advantage within 25 minutes. Matlock clogged one of those back, only for Glassboys to restore a 2-goal advantage, and there was still barely half an hour on the clock. Matlock came back with another goal themselves, and it was 4-3 to the home side at half-time. That 7 goals had been scored in the first half was down to a mixture of brilliant long-range shooting, that accounted for Stourbridge's first 2 goals, goalkeeping blunders at both ends, and a fair amount of good old end-to-end attacking by both sides. The second half, by contrast, was a fairly staid affair. Stourbridge added a 5th goal to their tally midway through, but both defences had tightened up by that stage and the match had settled into a predictable defensive effort by the home side, protecting what they had, with only the occasional foray upfield. But a very welcome 3 points to the victors, cementing their position in second place in the league table. I think I've said before that no team in this league are going to catch the leaders, Blyth Spartans, and I still think that's the case, but Blyth have managed to lose 2 of their last matches, and so a few cracks are starting to appear. Mind you, they are still 10 points clear of Stourbridge in second place. Last evening, Tuesday, Glassboys were due in action at local rivals Halesowe in town. Looking at the league table, you'd think Stourbridge would have the advantage, but you can never tell with these local derbies, and the rivalry between these two can get quite heated at times. Halesowe are down in 18th place in the league table at the moment, not far above the relegation mire, but they do have games in hand on most of the teams around them. While we're talking about the wrong end of league tables, Wolves took a step closer to the abyss when they lost 2-1 at Reading on Saturday. That was Wolves' 5th successive defeat, and they are 21st in the league table, just 1 place and 1 point ahead of the relegation places. The first half was goalless, but Wolves then equalised promptly after Reading went ahead, before conceding a late goal. They finished the match with 10 men after their defender Mike Williamson was sent off for a 2nd yellow card. Birmingham City had lost at home by 3-1 to Leeds United on Friday evening, but Villa managed a 2-0 away win at the bottom club Rotherham to retain their position in the middle of the Championship League table. Albion suffered a surprise 2-0 defeat at home to struggling Crystal Palace in the Premier League. Now athletics, and as one Scots person to another, let me salute Laura Muir after her magnificent efforts in the European Indoor Championships held in Belgrade last weekend. Laura was in a different class to all the other performers in the women's 1500 and 3000 metre events, both of which she won by a street. Her triumph capped an excellent weekend for the British team, who brought home 5 gold medals altogether, with Andrew Pozzi winning the 60 metres hurdles, Richard Kilty the 60 metre flat race, and Asher Phillip the women's 60 metres, in addition to Muir. It might have been six golds, but Shelly-Anna Oscan-Clark was denied one by the thickness of her vest in the women's 800 metres. Team GB's haul of 10 medals altogether, comprising the five golds already mentioned, plus four silvers and one bronze, equaled our best ever performance in these championships. The last time we achieved 10 medals was when the Europeans were held here in Birmingham 10 years ago. With the Outdoor World Championships coming along next August in London, it's good to see a host of British medals on the board. Also, next year, the World Indoors will be in Birmingham at the Indoor Arena, something for athletics fans like me to look forward to. Last week was also a good one for the UK in tennis. Andy Murray, back in action for the first time since his surprise departure early on in the Australian Open tournament at the end of January, won in Dubai. I don't know if you saw any details, but in the quarterfinal he was involved in the most amazing tiebreak in his match against the German player Philipp Kohlschreiber. Andy had lost the opening set in this match, also to a tiebreak, by 7-6, and the second set also reached the tiebreak stage, with neither player having been able to gain a decisive advantage. They embarked on this second tiebreak, Murray facing match point no fewer than 8 times, but succeeding in saving it every time. He had 7 set points himself before finally clinching the set with the tiebreak score 20-18 in his favour. The tiebreak alone lasted 31 minutes, and even the umpire became so confused he forgot at one point to make the players change ends. After all that, Murray won the third set and the match in less time than the tiebreak alone had required. From there, he proceeded through the semi-final and final without any alarms, winning both matches in straight sets. Immediately after the tournament was over, he was off to California for the Indian Wells event, which he has never managed to win. And while all that was taking place in Dubai, Jamie Murray, Andy's brother, and his Brazilian partner Bruno Soares were winning the doubles in a tournament in Mexico. No alarms in this one. They won the final by 6-3, 6-3 against Isner and Lopez. Returning to rugby, this coming weekend will feature the fourth round of matches in the Six Nations tournament. Wales kick off the weekend with a floodlit match against Ireland in Cardiff on Friday evening, then England host Scotland at Twickenham on Saturday. England, Ireland and Scotland are the three countries who have any remaining interest in this year's championship, each having two matches remaining. England have won all of their first three matches. Ireland and Scotland have each won two and lost one. Wales versus Ireland matches tend to be feisty affairs. The Welsh will be smarting after losing their last two matches, but Ireland will put up a strong fight and I think may edge a win. If they do, that would make the following week's concluding match, Ireland versus England in Dublin, an edge-of-the-seat battle. Scotland only very rarely cause a surprise at Twickenham, and although they are a much improved team this year, I don't think they'll disturb that pattern this time. They are missing through injury key players, and their scrum in particular looks frail, especially against a mighty pack of forwards such as England possess. But I expect an entertaining match, and the Scots may be able to do enough to pick up at least a losing bonus point. I will be at Stourton Park watching Stourbridge's match on Saturday afternoon, but I suspect I will sneak indoors to watch the England-Scotland encounter on their big screen starting at 4 o'clock. England's one-day cricket squad, poor souls, have been toiling in the sunshine in Antigua, playing a best-of-three series of internationals against the West Indies. England won the two opening matches with some comfort to clinch the series. In the first one, England set a target of 296 after the 50 overs, with a fine 100 from skipper Morgan and 50s from Stokes and Billings. West Indies were never up with the scoring rate to match that, and an England win by 45 runs was the outcome. In the second match, the hosts batted first, and after an initial success by England's opening bowlers, the West Indies middle order pushed them along to a total of 225 all out in the 48th over. When England replied, there was the middle order wobble we've become accustomed to before a masterful 90 not out by Joe Root, accompanied by Wokes, who came in at number 8 and made 68 not out, took them home for a 4-wicket win. The final match is due tomorrow, Thursday. A final item from the stop press department. Stourbridge football team, the Glasboys, won Tuesday evening's clash with Halesow in town 1-0. An early goal from Luke Benbow did the trick. But that's about it from the sports desk for another week. Plenty more next time, no doubt, but until then, it's goodbye from Brian Gall.